All right, good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
It's the first time, or the first Sunday of the month, and as you can see, we have the Lord's Supper here. So the last time I was here, we looked at two churches that were addressed by Jesus in Revelation. Today, we will go back to the Old Testament and look at a book that is near and dear to my own heart, personally. If you haven't known by now, but what you have read just minutes ago, it is the book of Ecclesiastes. Today we will only focus on the first chapter of the book as it serves as an introduction to the rest of the content of the book. My hope is that after today, everyone here will have the inclination or even a curiosity to read the rest of the book and study it on your own or hopefully with a group. So the word Ecclesiastes is taken from the Latin transliteration of the Greek translation of the Hebrew word Koheleth. That's the Hebrew word for Ecclesiastes, which means preacher or speaker of the assembly. So let's look at Ecclesiastes 1:1. I'm going to be having a hard time saying Ecclesiastes. Okay, so 1:1, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. The opening verse presents the speaker as a member of King David's family, but his name is not mentioned. So scholars have debated if the preacher is Solomon, the son of David, or a collection of other authors. There are several reasons that indicate he could be the author. First, he was the only son of David, who became king of Jerusalem and over all of Israel. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself here. Second, Ecclesiastes 1:12 upholds Solomon's reputation for wisdom. And we know that out of everything else God could grant him, Solomon asked God for wisdom, as we read in 1 Kings 3, 9 to 12. So let's look at it. Verse 9, give your servant therefore an understanding mind to govern your people. This is Solomon speaking, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to govern this, your great people? It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this. And God said to him, because you have asked this and have not asked for yourself long life or riches or the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right. I guess the next one. Oh, sorry guys, that was my bad. It says in verse 12, behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I give you a wise and discerning mind so that none like you has been before you, and none like you shall arise after you. So, if we read further into the text, God did not just give Solomon wisdom, but he also gave him riches and honor on top of that. Take note that the blessing that God gifted Solomon is everything that the world right now aspires to own. Okay. In our current age, we often highly regard our contemporaries who have achieved wealth, honor, and wisdom. So, the next slide. So, if you guys haven't seen this person yet, a Korean-American by the name of Johnny Kim, at one point in his life, was a member of the Navy SEALs, which is an elite special force of the American Navy that only a select few can be a part of. It takes extreme mental and physical fortitude for you to be in the Navy, or not just the Navy, but the Navy SEALs. Once he was bored of being a Navy SEAL, he went to Harvard and became a doctor. And when he ultimately became bored of practicing as a doctor, he became an astronaut. Believe it or not. And you know how old this guy is? This guy is 1 year younger than me. For us, this man has reached the pinnacle of human achievement. And I would really hate to be his older brother, because there's no way in a country mile I could ever compete with him. Okay. I would be the black sheep of that family. Now, regardless, Solomon was the Johnny Kim of his time. Okay? But with more prestige and wisdom. God gave Solomon wisdom that no one else in the world has ever had and will ever have. That's how wise Solomon was. Solomon is an example of the peak of human achievement. However, we then see in Ecclesiastes 1 verse 2 that despite his wisdom, riches, and honor, he still states, "Vanity of vanities," says the preacher, "vanity of vanities, all is vanity." The preacher states the term "vanities of vanities." In the evangelical commentary on the Bible, it says the Hebrew literary form X of X, like for example, "vanity of vanities," indicates that the superlative and adds to the intensity of the statement. So, for example, the Bible does this, like King of Kings, Holy of Holies, Vanity of Vanities. So what the Bible is intending here is, it's not just vanity, but the mother, the most absolute of vanities. Okay, that's how the Bible is saying or expressing that statement. The phrase emphasizes not only intensity, but also how we can comprehend that all is vanity. Okay? Now, the literal translation of the Hebrew word for vanity is hebel, which means actual vapor or breath. That's what the Hebrew word is. The preacher uses the word vapor figuratively to be understood as vanity, meaningless, insubstantial, or futile. It is like breath, a puff of wind, or an airy nothingness. The NIV and the NLT better illustrates the phrase to be meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Okay? In the KJV and the ESV, let's put it here, the ESV, it says vanity. So starting in verse 3 and then throughout Ecclesiastes, Solomon would repeat the phrase under the sun. Before we determine what he means by this phrase, let us first recall Genesis 3, 17 to 19. We're going way back. So verse 17. "And to Adam he said, because you have listened to the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground. For out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return." At the time when Adam and Eve sinned against God, the whole world was subjected to a curse. The effects of God cursing creation in Genesis has made everything under the sun meaningless. Before the fall, work was pleasant and it guaranteed fulfillment of a good yield. After the fall, any output man exerts does not necessarily guarantee an equal result. Have you ever planted vegetables? And there are times when you actually harvest your vegetables, the amount you put in, the amount of effort you put in, you get very not satisfactory type of vegetables in return. Sometimes we do more work and get not that much back in return. This is part of the fall. Ultimately, any work we have accomplished in life will always be negated by death. In Ecclesiastes 1:3, it says, "What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun?" When I first received my first permanent job, it was an exciting time as I felt that I could achieve almost anything my heart desired. I can now afford going to places that I want, purchase almost all the material things I long for compared to when I was broke. And now I could achieve anything money can buy. It was not long after this honeymoon stage at work that I found that I could not go to places I wanted because I had to physically be at work. I could not afford everything I wanted. And I could not focus on the pleasures of life because I am, again, stuck at work for 8 to 10 hours a day. Sometimes, my first job, I was there from 8 o'clock a.m. and I would go home 10 p.m. So furthermore, I reflected upon this cycle of going to work every day for 30 to 40 years until I retire. Provided, okay, that God willing, I would still be alive at that time. And at retirement, I would already be too old to physically accomplish what I only dreamt of doing when I was in my 20s. I had, at one point, an existential crisis. I went to school for X amount of years just to go to work and go to work for 40 to 50 years in a monotonous life. Because again, life doesn't give us always what we wanted. We don't always get the jobs that we want. Sometimes we get jobs that, for necessity, we get. When I was in my first summer job, I hated it. But the only thing that got me through the day was the money. But I've seen people in the factory working day in, day out, because it was a necessity for them to do that. Because they have kids. When you have kids, your life doesn't matter anymore. You need to support them any way you can. So I was looking at that and go, what is... It seems now more, the more we get older, the more time seems to go faster as well. I came to a point where, what is the point of all this? What, you know, I came into this world, my life is going to be, let's say I live up to 80 to 90 years old. 1/3 of that is me stuck in the office or in a job somewhere. It's kind of depressing when you only look at it in that lens. I ultimately asked myself the question, is this what life is all about, being in a rat race? Are we all working in the present just to prepare for death? See, it says, go to college, find a job, pay off debts, climb a ladder, 2-week vacation, work 45 years, the end. An old Chinese proverb says, the emperor is rich, but he cannot buy an extra year. You can get, your income can be in millions of dollars, but when you find out that you're going to die tomorrow, any amount of money you have in the bank doesn't matter. It's not going to give you an extra minute of life. When we look at the phrase under the sun, It is not considered to mean in our contemporary sense of as anything during the summer of the or at the beach. You know, hey, we're gonna have fun under the sun. That usually says or means, hey, we're gonna, you know, have fun during the summer. But here, it's intended differently. It is a Hebrew phrase that signifies perspective, or it signifies a perspective limited to earthly life under the horizon, or basically a life apart from God. That's what it's saying. Under the sun is not only limited to people who are atheists, but it also can apply to people who are religious as well. The main point of under the sun is that you have a life without God. So for example, and it's ironic, you could be the most religious person in a church, but if that is not governed by God, then what you're doing is meaningless. It's under the sun. To better explain it, we can understand verse 3 as, what does man gain by all the toil at which he toils apart from God or without God? Okay? So instead of saying under the sun, say apart from God or without God. Now it kind of makes sense to us. So I was doom scrolling through social media and ironically came across an inspiring story about an impoverished widowed Hmong farmer in Thailand who sacrificed all he had in order to financially support his son's college education. Okay? At the time this photo was taken, the son had successfully graduated college, and he said that his father was his biggest pride. Looking at the photograph, words do not need to convey the extent of the father's sacrifice. But if we look at verse 3 of Ecclesiastes chapter 1, the fact still remains that apart from God, what the poor farmer did for his son and what the son will eventually achieve will ultimately be meaningless. We will see why as we continue on in chapter 1. It is a depressing reflection when we see life confined under the sun. In Ecclesiastes 1:4, it says, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. In the 1940s, the world witnessed atrocities in concentration camps in Europe by Nazi Germany. We thought as a civilization, we would not repeat the same mistakes of treating our fellow human beings this way. Not long after, in 1975, the Khmer Rouge regime in Cambodia conducted one of the most heinous genocides against its own people by systematically rounding up mostly educated citizens and anyone else they hated and sending them off to the killing fields to be massacred. The Khmer Rouge would document all their victims by taking their photographs. So we don't know the fate of this person, but I would suspect 90% she was executed. And probably along with her child. If you want to look at, there's a movie called The Killing Fields. It was a really good movie. It actually was filmed in the Philippines, to be honest. And they had Filipino actors act as one of the Cambodian guys there. So, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. Anyways, you may ask why I am showing these photos. And the reason is that this is the result of life under the sun, i.e. without God. Generations have come and gone through the ages. We think that with the generations that will follow, humanity would progress for the better. However, the more things seem to change, the more they stay the same, as history tends to repeat itself. It only took 30 years in between the above examples from 1940 to 1975 for genocides to occur again in history. Okay, we never learn our lesson. We think we abolished slavery back a long time ago. No, there's still slavery today. Nobody is just reporting it. Let's read Ecclesiastes 1:5-6. It says, "The sun rises, the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind, and on its circuits the wind returns." History repeating itself is much like the sun rising and going down, and the wind blowing from south to north. It's a cyclic type of endeavor. These passages illustrate the futility and the brevity of life, the shortness of life. The world is shown as a continuing cycle, and that the individual's life has little effect on the world. Solomon is basically saying, if the world is under a continuous cycle of repetition under the sun, then what is the point of life when there will ultimately be no progress if people have to start doing things again and again? Several religions, like Buddhism, have tried to break away from this cycle under the sun. Anyone familiar with the tenets of Buddhism or Hinduism? So the point of Buddhism is to break the cycle of rebirth and suffering. It's called samsara, by disassociating oneself from things under the sun. Buddhists and Hindus believe that people are subjected to reincarnation, in that they are in a constant, perpetual cycle of birth and death. So this philosophy from these religions mirrors the meaninglessness that Solomon states in these verses in Ecclesiastes. The ultimate liberation from this cycle of birth and death and ultimately suffering is what Buddhists call nirvana. Okay, this is called nirvana. Someone made a band based on that name. However, nirvana requires the individual completely eradicate any self-interest, desire for personal gain, attachments, cravings, and personal dislikes. So you need to detach yourself from all those things in order for you to reach enlightenment, i.e. nirvana. I believe that no one has ever attained nirvana personally, even Buddha himself, for the simple fact that nirvana will require us to be ultimately free from our innate sinful nature. You want to reach enlightenment? Don't be a sinner, i.e. don't ever sin at all. It is impossible to disassociate ourselves from the sinful nature in this side of life. In theory, this concept of breaking yourself from the material things in this world is a good theory in concept, but in practice, it's impossible. It still comes short. So let us continue on with Ecclesiastes 1:7-8. It says, "All streams run to the sea, but the sea is not full to the place where the streams flow, where they flow again. All things are full of weariness. A man cannot utter it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing." In addition to showing that life involves cycles, verse 7 and 8 uses the examples of the sea never being full, and the eye not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing to show the unsatisfying nature of life. You guys know who Jim Carrey is? Jim Carrey is a famous actor, and at one point he said, "I hope everybody could get rich and famous and will have everything that they ever dreamed of, so they will know that that is not the answer." So Jim Carrey is rich. He's very accomplished actor. But he still came to the conclusion in his life that because even though he was rich and he was accomplished, he won awards, he was still not satisfied. There's definitely one person who will agree with Jim Carrey, and that is Solomon. Just as the sea is never full, people struggle to be filled or find satisfaction in life under the sun. So we go to verse 9 to 10. It says, "What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there a thing of which it is said, 'See, this is new'? It has been already in the ages before us." A quote from the Manners and Customs of the Bible reads, "The author of Ecclesiastes complains frequently in the book about the monotony of life. His phrase, 'nothing new under the sun,' has come down through the centuries to express the sense of sameness in all that happens." The sense of sameness. So, here, I have a phone. I'm currently holding a phone which was considered new 3 years ago. Now it has been replaced with a newer and more powerful model which has the ability to capture better cinematic videos as compared to my current phone. Now, this is oldish. Any new novelties in life, such as newer phones and gadgets, will never satisfy our soul. Actually, I was talking with my sister and my mom about my phone, and I was actually wondering or thinking, should I upgrade my phone? And my sister's like, "Yeah, give me your phone for free." Am I satisfied with this phone? Well, when I go to the Apple website, I'm not. When I see something better. So every new thing we gain will ultimately leave us unsatisfied. Like a drug, we will always pursue new novelties in an attempt to cure our lack of satisfaction. Just like the Rolling Stones song. In Ecclesiastes 1:11, it says, "There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after." Has any one of you guys read Ecclesiastes ever? Does that give you a good feeling? Did it ever give you a good feeling when you read chapter 1 at least? It's like, "Oh, I'm finished chapter 1. I think I'm going to go for an ice cream because of this." If you did, that's great. For me, I didn't. I had an existential crisis when I read Ecclesiastes. In generations to come, our memories will continually fade. People's legacies will be forgotten in future generations as only a handful of people will be remembered. If you ask me who my great-grandfathers are from either my mother or father's side, I would not be able to tell you what their names were, much less what they have done in their lives. My grandfather knows my great-grandfather well based on his experiences with him as his son. Okay? My dad would have some knowledge of my great-grandfather based on his experience with him as his grandson. For me, I never had the opportunity to meet him face to face or even catch a glimpse of him on a photograph. In my generation, my great-grandfather is nothing more than a complete stranger to me. I do not know who he is. I don't know what he looks like. He's forever lost in the memories of my grandfather, who is also with the Lord right now, and with my dad. After my dad, no one knows. And it's going to be the same thing for you and me. The following generations to come, unless you are Johnny Kim, will never really remember you. As subsequent generations come, your memory as a person who lived in history will continue to grow dim. Starting in verse 12, Solomon shifts his attention in addressing the meaninglessness of wisdom itself. Does this mean that what we read in Proverbs is meaningless? Because Solomon was the one who also wrote Proverbs. Does that mean whatever he said in Proverbs? Is Ecclesiastes in contradiction with Proverbs? Spoiler alert, no it isn't. Because we need to remember that the meaninglessness described in Ecclesiastes is within the context of a life without an external perspective, i.e. a life without God. It is through this lens that we see in the following verses how wisdom is meaningless for Solomon. Okay, so let's look at verse 12 to 14. 12, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel in Jerusalem, and I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything that is done under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after the wind. Has anyone here ever, I know it's a euphemism in a figure of speech, but has anyone here caught wind before? Caught wind is, I caught wind of some gossip. But have you ever literally, physically caught wind or air and grasped it in your hands? Anyone here? You mean I'm the only one who did it? Just kidding. No, we can't grasp air. That's what Solomon is saying. Solomon, who was gifted wisdom, still pursued wisdom from the world, and found it like chasing after the wind, which is impossible to grasp. So if we continue on Ecclesiastes 1:15, it says, "What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be counted." As quoted from the Faith Life Study Bible, this phrase can be understood in a moral sense as a reference to injustice, you know, crookedness. It can also be understood as a reference to the limitations of human intellect. So we have all faced injustices in life to certain degrees, and it is ultimately the cause of our sin, okay? That is the unfortunate consequence God has subjected us all to experience. As it also says in, if you look in chapter 7, verse 13, consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? I just like to make a point here that it says that he has made crooked. It actually is us who has made things crooked because of our sin. And the punishment of sin is, you know, God said, okay, you guys wanted to do it your way? You want to disobey me? Okay. Well, here's the curse. Here's the consequence that you get. this crookedness that you will experience. Okay, much like when before, when my dad told me, don't put that fork into the, what's it called, the electrical socket. And so I did, and I faced the consequences. My eyes now light up. No, they don't. So if you look at Ecclesiastes 7:13, consider the work of God who can make straight what is made crooked. That's something that we just have to deal with in life, that we will face injustices. Like, for example, I was speaking to somebody yesterday and they told me, I did all these things to study for my exam, and yet this is the only output I got. And I said, yes, I have been there. I've studied so much, and I only got a B. While my other friend, who did not do, he skipped classes, he didn't even read the book, and he took the test, and he got an A. What an injustice. And that's just a simple thing, but people have faced harsher injustices in life. But that is the result of our sin. That was the result, and that is what is happening under the sun. So let's look at Ecclesiastes 1:16-17. It says, I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this is also is a striving after the wind. The world today contains a significant number of self-help books. Anyone here have some of that at home? You have self-help books? Or do you guys have books about philosophy? I have one. It's the Meditations by Marcus Aurelius. And scientific, you know, we you know, people have these books and also scientific journals in an attempt to understand the purpose of life and how it can be meaningful. So far, no one has ever arrived at the solution under the sun. If we did, if someone actually made a book, like one of these, no one would be making any more books, self-help books, or philosophy books. Oh, wait a minute. What about this? But sadly, instead of looking at this, we look at those instead. So here's a really good way for us to make money. Just keep making these type of self-help books. People will always buy it. Why? Because we have an innate curiosity to better ourselves in our lives. Apart from God, no matter how much knowledge we gain in university and college, we will always come up short. Okay, for those people who are in college or university, I'm not saying for you to drop out. I'm not saying that. So parents, don't come at me. I'm just saying, in a wrong perspective, you will feel depressed. Even when we cover all of our walls with degrees or on our deathbeds, those degrees will be worthless. That is a fact of life. It reminds me of a couple who used to come to this church long, long time ago. The woman from this couple was distinguished with various degrees in the sciences, with a PhD in biology, if I remember correctly. She, however, suffered with depression, and the sheer knowledge and wisdom she received with those degrees did not help her assuage her depression. She had a wealth of knowledge in the sciences in her mind. She had a beautiful mind, but it was wrought with depression. Eventually, she took her own life one day and left her husband alone in the world. I remember that despite losing his wife, that even in a state of his heart-sunken grief, he thanked the members of the church for their continuous prayers regarding his wife's battle with depression. So instead of giving us freedom, the more we pursue wisdom under the sun, the more it gets us closer to a dead end. It just comes short. If you read, like I mentioned, if you read Meditations by Marcus Aurelius, when I first read it, I was like, wow, this thing, I could get a lot from this book on being stoic, stoicism. But yet it comes short. It comes short. It doesn't solve the fact that life will be meaningless under the sun. In verse 18 of Ecclesiastes chapter 1, it says, "For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." Instead of wisdom resolving Solomon's problem, it only compounds it. Profound thought results in sorrow and grief. Have you ever thought of something, and the more you think of it, the more it makes you feel sad? Greater knowledge results in greater pain. Has anyone ever heard of that phrase, ignorance is bliss? Ignorance is bliss. The phrase ignorance is bliss is a phrase created by the English poet Thomas Gray in his poem Ode on a Distant Prospect of Eton College. You don't have to know what that poem is. If you want to read it, that's fine. But that's where the phrase ignorance is bliss come from. The phrase basically means that in certain circumstances, it is better not to know all the facts about a situation. Has anyone of you ever wondered where the lithium batteries for your electronics come from? Have you ever purchased a replacement lithium battery from Amazon or Temu? People are laughing. Temu? Amazon, huh? Now, there was an article from AP News about child laborers in Nigeria, in Nigeria's illegal lithium mines. These children, as young as 5 years old, were forced to work from early morning to late evening to sort and bag up 10, 25-kilogram bags of lithium-rich rock a day. Now, they're not getting any money for this. They're only getting chump change. Due to abject poverty, a six-year-old girl was pulled out of school by her family, who felt they couldn't afford to send two children to school, that they prioritized sending only her 11-year-old brother. Imagine that. As a parent, you have to choose between your kids and who can be eligible to go to school. Here we live in a land of plenty. Instead of the kids here, you know, instead of the kids really wanting to go to school because everyone has to go to school, there are kids who don't want to go to school. The lithium ores would then be sold to various Chinese companies throughout the black market. The Chinese companies would then manufacture lithium batteries or distribute them to actual manufacturers. These batteries would then be sold into the world market, and consumers like us would be none the wiser buying that lithium battery that could be mined by a five-year-old somewhere in Africa. This is a case where we come to realize a certain evil in the world exists, that we are ultimately complicit in, but have no power as individuals to stop it. Now that you learn that information, that your battery might be from a slave, labor camp somewhere, are you gonna buy batteries now? Yes. Of course, it's a necessity because our electronics depend on those batteries. But it makes you feel sad though, right? That this is the extent of the world that we're living in, that certain things like this happen, and that there's nothing you can do about it alone, yourself. I mean, we could boycott this as a church, but that won't do anything. And we don't even know which one's legit or not. Ignorance is indeed bliss. This is a case where we don't have anything that we can do. Brothers and sisters, evil itself is a product of our sinful nature, a life apart from God. The more we come to know of the evils in this world, the more it increases our sorrow. If the Lord had blessed Solomon with wisdom and he was in fellowship with God, why is it that he still expressed that everything is meaningless under the sun? God granted him this wonderful gift of wisdom. And also, the bonus part is he got riches and honor as well. But why would he write Ecclesiastes? What is the point? Why didn't he stop in Proverbs? Why didn't he stop in Songs of Solomon? Because those were very happy books. This one is the opposite. Why did he do this? It is told in 1 Kings 11 that Solomon acquired for himself 700 wives and 300 concubines for pleasure and also for political treaties. Wow, 1,000 wives and concubines? Maybe that's why he was depressed. No, he wasn't. Unfortunately, this act of him having these wives caused him to become unfaithful to the Lord and worship the gods that his wives introduced to him. Among these gods is Molech, who is associated with child sacrifice, believe it or not. You know what they do with Molech in some cases? It's a bronze statue of a statue, and in one case, they would have their hands out like this, and inside the statue, it's a bronze statue. Inside you put fire and wood, and so that whole bronze statue would be hot. So you could basically fry an egg on top of Molech, okay? And what they do when they sacrifice a little baby is they put the child on the hands for the baby to burn up. And while the baby is crying, obviously, for its life, you know the prophets of Molech, you know what they do? They bang drums. They bang drums so that they won't hear the cries of the child. Isn't that evil? And there's some cases where they actually make their kids go into a fire pit and never to come back out. That's child sacrifice, detestable, and that's what, God said, that's evil. But yet, here we have Solomon, who it says it was not explicitly stated if he personally participated in child sacrificial practices, but he did allow the people in his kingdom to practice it, especially his wife, whoever that was that introduced Molech. As we see in 1 Kings 11:7-8, then Solomon built a high place for Chemosh, the abomination of Moab, and for Molech, the abomination of the Ammonites, on the mountain east of Jerusalem. And so he did for all his foreign wives who made offerings and sacrificed to their gods. Instead of Solomon maintaining his trust in the Lord, he trusted in his own wisdom, the one, ironically, God gave him. And everything else outside of God, he trusted. Does he need to have those wives for political reason? Probably not. If you have a God who owns everything, he trusted more on the gift rather than the giver. Solomon's folly caused his kingdom to be divided during his son Rehoboam's reign. The Bible did not explicitly state that Solomon repented. It didn't. I was looking for it in Chronicles and in 1 Kings. I didn't see it. It just jumped right into his son. However, it didn't say that, but however, I would like to believe, this is me personally, that near the end of his life, he did repent from what he, you know, his folly. That his repentance included him writing Ecclesiastes as a case study and a warning to others that without God, life is truly meaningless. And it is only in God that life is meaningful. As it states in Ecclesiastes 12:11-14, it says, "The words of the wise are like goads, and like nails firmly fixed are the collected sayings. They are given by one shepherd. My son, beware of anything beyond these, of making many books, there is no end, and much study is a weariness of the flesh. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil." Now, to fear God is not only having reverence for him. It also involves us to have faith in him, just as Abraham, as Moses, King David, and even King Solomon at the beginning of his reign. As they did. The outcome of this faith is obedience towards him in keeping his commandments. In the end of Ecclesiastes, this was the conclusion that the preacher Solomon concluded regarding life. Out of everything that he said is meaningless, this is the thesis statement that he concluded with. The point Ecclesiastes is providing to us is that a life confined to the horizons of this world under the sun will never find satisfaction. It will never find satisfaction. So, as we learned in last week's sermon, Jesus is the living water and the only source of our satisfaction. From the first chapter of Ecclesiastes, what we have read so far, does any of it relate to you? Have you ever read this thing and found yourself in any existential crises? Do you ever question about your life and how it seems to be meaningless? Do you find that you are trapped in a life under the sun? And what I mean by under the sun is, do you feel trapped in a life when God is not involved? If so, then we need to have a change in perspective. This is what Ecclesiastes is telling us. We need a change in perspective. So, we should not focus on life under the sun to give us meaning, but life in the sun. Okay? Let's repeat that again. We should not focus on life under the sun to give us meaning, but life in the sun. Raise up your hand here who profess that they trust Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior. Great. Now we should focus on Him who saved us from our sins. Does that mean that we should not pursue wisdom? Does that mean we shouldn't go to school? Does that mean everything in life, even the phone that I have, is meaningless? No. We just have to have a change in perspective. We know that this phone is going to be, I know that this phone is not going to give me satisfaction. So enjoying this phone for a while is great. It takes a burden off of me because I know this thing will never satisfy me. The only one who can satisfy me is the one who gave me this phone. Not the guy from Rogers, God. Okay? Actually, it wasn't Rogers, the guy from Apple. Okay, only God can satisfy. And when you're in school and you are taking your exams or when you're getting your degrees, have in the back of your mind that it is not going to make your life, it's not going to satisfy your life. The only thing that can satisfy your life is Jesus Himself. Okay? So whatever you get in school, if you pass, great. You don't have to be great at it. You don't have to be an astronaut or a Navy SEAL or a doctor in the same lifetime. If you do, that's great, but that's not what life really means. I didn't mention here in Ecclesiastes, Solomon also mentioned also pleasures in life. That's also meaningless. But that's under the context of life under the sun. If you like to go to trips and think that that will satisfy you in your soul, how many trips have you ever gone, to that you're like, oh, I think I'm about good. That last trip, that's good for me for the rest of my life. No, people want to keep going places. And I'm not saying that that's not bad. It isn't. Enjoy going to Selkirk and enjoy it for what it is at the moment that God gave you that opportunity to go there. Selkirk. I'm not trying to bash Selkirk, okay? It's a good place. But what I'm saying is, go there, but don't think that that will satisfy your soul. Only Jesus can satisfy our souls. Okay? Trust me, this guitar that I bought will satisfy my playing abilities. No, it doesn't. I still play mediocre. But now I just have a red guitar. That's it. It doesn't do anything for me. Okay, so we should not focus on life under the sun to give us meaning, but life in the sun is the takeaway that we have today. All right?